Hi, everybody. My name is Quinn Gross, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's November 11th, 1994. My home group's the Hope Group in Lee Summit, which is about 15 miles outside of Kansas City, Missouri. And that's in District 7 and Area 39 for you numbers people. I do have a sponsor, and he is here at the International Convention. So, and we're glad you're all here today, so thank you all for being here. Give yourself a hand. This thing doesn't work well with an empty auditorium, so thank you all for being here. And I want to thank all the people from San Antonio and all the volunteers and everybody that's given of their time. Thank you. Before we start, I'd like to remind everybody, if you do have a cell phone or any other electronic device, would you please turn it to something that won't annoy your neighbor? That'd be great. Thank you. I'd like to start and ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Once again, I'd like to thank you all for being here. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speakers. Our topic is prayer under pressure, in case you're in the wrong room, or maybe you're in the right room, I don't know. Pressure for me was trying to get dressed in the restroom next door here, get in a suit and tie, so, you know, I did that okay. And my prayer has been answered. All three speakers showed up, so I don't have to fill in. Our first speaker is Bethany E., and she's from North Carolina. And please give a round welcome, warm welcome to Bethany.
My name is Bethany. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is March 18, 2005. My home group is the Common Sense Group in Franklin, North Carolina, but I am also representing where I got sober, which was Palm Beach County, Florida, which I'm very grateful for. March 18, 2005 was also my 15th birthday, by far the worst birthday I'd ever experienced up until then. Picking up a white chip on your birthday was not exactly the thing I had planned to do. I have two parents in the program, one of which is here. My father, Danny, has 30 years this year. And my mother will have 23 in December. I grew up in AA. I was a little kid with the coloring book in the corner of the room that was probably annoying everybody else. I saw sponsees in and out of the house, used big books as coasters, and never really thought much about what my parents were involved in. But eventually that time came that I, too, was to walk into these rooms, and a miracle absolutely happened to me. When I first heard about the topic of prayer under pressure, I felt a lot of pressure. I really didn't know what to do about that, so I prayed. I can tell you when I first came in, I did not pray about anything. The only prayer that I made was to die when I first came in. And for quite a while afterwards, until the steps in the program eventually got me. Today I use prayer as a way to solve my problems and to work through my problems and to find a better understanding of myself, and for that I'm truly grateful, as most of you probably know for yourselves. When I came in, I didn't have a God of my understanding. I had been raised to believe in God, but I don't even think I was old enough to really know what that meant. And when I came into the program, I read that part in the big book where it says, you know, that we either have to accept spiritual help or die. And I said, well, that's not really good odds. That's not really good choices. So I started to work with a sponsor. And as I worked through the steps, I really hadn't found this God of my understanding. And I remember I did the third step, and I got down on my knees with my sponsor and did the third step prayer. And I didn't have a bolt of lightning. I didn't have a burning bush. I just kind of went about and moved on. But from that moment, And from the time that I came through these rooms and came through those doors, I started to develop a connection that I didn't even know was there. And as I've stayed sober over the years, it's just gotten bigger and gotten better. And every day I just hope that I can improve upon it and get more of that. I mean, everybody wants more of a good thing. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have never found that prayer or working and trying to depend on a higher power, I haven't had a problem yet, you know, that I couldn't overcome. May not have seemed like that at the time, but in hindsight, I knew that I was going to be okay. Today, I have a beautiful life. When I came in at 15, I was very angry, and everybody was much older than me, and I didn't drink coffee, so I thought I wasn't going to be allowed in the club. Today, I drank about a pot of coffee a day. AA has given me everything, and it gave me the one thing that I never knew that I wanted or that I needed, and that was to find a purpose in life, and that was to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I developed a connection with a higher power. I repaired relationships with my family members. I'm graduating nursing school this month. I mean, I never... If I had gotten what I wanted when I came in, I would have shortchanged myself. And I never understood what that meant, but I do today. When I came in, all I wanted to know what was wrong with me, and today I have so much more than that. So anyone that is out there, I went to a convention when I was newly sober. So if you're out there, I know how you're feeling. It's a little overwhelming. If you're out there and you're wondering if this is the place for you or if this is what can work for you or if you're ever going to find a higher power of your understanding or any of those million questions that we have when we come in, all I can say is stay. Just please stay. I didn't believe the miracle would happen for me either, but, you know, God put the right people in my life and the right sayings in my life, and, you know, I have grown into a person I probably wouldn't have liked when I came in. You know, one of those people that says, read the big book. So, but I'm definitely blessed to be here, as I'm sure a lot of us feel that way. And the connection that I have with my higher power, even when times are tough. I got sober at a young age, so I really hadn't gone through many life events because they hadn't happened yet. I didn't have a driver's license, so I didn't know what it was like to have a DUI. I wasn't old enough to get married, I don't even think legally, so I couldn't have lost a spouse. Probably could have had kids by that age, but didn't. Another miracle. And so at the time, you know, I hadn't gone through a lot of things, but in the 5 years, I think I've gone through more things in sobriety that have been very challenging than when I went through, when I got sober. So as far as prayer under pressure, I think the pressure is always there. It's just I choose to deal with it in a different way. And every time I don't want to do what I'm supposed to do, I call my sponsor and she tells me what to do. And I go to a meeting and I hear what I don't want to hear and I do what I don't want to do and I pray and I, you know, kind of make a face like this. And but eventually it works out. And that's what I love about this program is that it's kept me humble enough and willing enough to know that I still need to pray and that I still need to go to meetings and I still need to talk about these things, you know, and I need to help someone else that's going through the same thing because that's when I really understand what I'm going through. Is when I help another alcoholic. And I just love the humility of this program. And I heard an old-timer once, he said, don't ever be ashamed to be passionate about AA. And I'm so glad I've kept that from when I got sober. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it is amazing that after 75 years, this still works. When I came in at 15 and I opened that book and I saw 1939, I said, this is never going to work for me, you know. Didn't even have television, you know. So, but as a 15-year-old kid who walked in scared and didn't know what to do and used anger as a defense mechanism and really just wanted to know what was wrong with her, I know that AA has something special. And as nervous as I am talking in front of this many people, I know that you all understand, and I know that I'm home, And I know that this is the place that I was meant to be. So anyone, if you're wondering, just stick around and you'll see it and you'll feel it and you'll know it. And then you'll just want to be here all the time and make this a part of your life. And I'm so glad that AA grabbed a hold of me and that God kept me here long enough. And I'm just so grateful to be here. And I wish everyone a wonderful time at this conference. I am so excited to be here in San Antonio. Very cool. So for everyone, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Please be safe. And it was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bethany. Next up, well, that's a little more time for the other two speakers, isn't it? I asked all the speakers how they got here, and John told me that they put a bunch of names in the hat, and his name came out. So, you know, that's how it works with us in here on this God deal. So, John, I just met John about 15 minutes ago, and I know he's an alcoholic just by the way we shook hands with each other, you know? Just how we meet each other, we can tell. John's from California. Come on up, John.
Thank you, Bethany. John Pett's alcoholic. And as they do in Texas, by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since January 31st of 1985. And for that, I am very grateful, as are the people in my life today. And the people out of my life, for that matter. You know, I want to thank the committee. They're putting on a wonderful conference. Just an absolutely great job. It's a privilege and an honor to be asked to participate in something like this, let alone just participate in my own sobriety. I got to tell you, when I found out that I was speaking, I was just like, you could hit me, knock me over with a feather, because it was totally unexpected. And then a little while later, I got the topic in the mail. And I have to tell you that I went, God has a great sense of humor. Because the first thought that came to my mind is, I have nothing to say on that topic. But I will find something, as you know, because we're alcoholic, and I am alcoholic. Is your wallet still in your pocket, Quinn?
Okay. No, my wife's got it.
So, it's a pleasure to be here. And I also want to thank the city of San Antonio. I've just been just amazed at the hospitality that they've shown. The people who are here, just the non-alcoholics out there who are making us feel welcome in their great city. And it's just a joy to be here. So, round of applause for them. So let me think. Prayer under pressure. You know, I don't know about you, but I've heard it said this weekend already that, as a good friend of mine calls it, I had the RIDS before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was restless and irritable and discontented for a long time. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. My skin didn't feel right. I was, as some people have said, always comparing my insides with your outsides. And I knew that you all had some secret that I just, you know, you were keeping from me. And, you know, and the funny part about that is that perception was a lie. It was nothing but a lie. Because when I look back in hindsight on the family and the household that I grew up in, neither one of my parents drank. We always had a roof over our head. I don't have any of those stories about being thrown up against the wall, or guns going off inside the house or anything of that nature at all. I have nobody to blame for my alcoholism but me, you know, through and through. I am an alcoholic because I'm alcoholic, not because of how I grew up, not because of what happened to me, not because of any of that stuff, not because of my height, none of that stuff. I used to blame him for that. I want you to know that. So, but you know, that was how I grew up. And I was always sticking my finger out and it was always your fault. And if you all just would like get into line, and I didn't know that that's the way that that I was thinking. And I didn't know that that was my truth or that that was what was going on inside of this head. And I began praying to get things. You know, God, give me. God, give me. And my prayers would go unanswered. And so I learned that God didn't answer my prayers. He might answer your prayers, but he didn't answer my prayers. And, you know, it's funny. My life is not anything like that today. Because, see, what I was doing from a very young age, and I did it all through my drinking, get me out of this one, I won't do it again, I promise. Please, please, please. All of those sorts of things is what it talks about in step 7 on page 75. And the only reason I can tell you that that's the page is that's because I read that today. Because that was one of the first thoughts that came into my mind when I saw this topic. And that was treating God like some kind of bush league pinch hitter. And that is how I grew up and that is how I lived my life up until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and after. You know, I didn't get tra-la-la sobriety. I got here, and I can remember being in the treatment center I went to because I was going to get thrown out of the house, and I really didn't. It really wasn't an attractive thought that I was going to sleep on the streets, and or have to pay for a hotel because I'm just a cheap son of a gun. So I can remember being terrified in that treatment center. That this program that I was being told about for the first time in my life, and I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous before I got here, that this program I was being told about was going to help save my life, or was going to save my life, and that would save my life if I only did a few simple things. And I was certain that it would work for you. One more time, God's going to be there for you, but he's not going to be there for me. And I was terrified. Absolutely terrified. Now, thank goodness I was locked up. So I didn't have anywhere to go because I agree with Bethany. Just please stay. Just please stay till that terror passes. That absolute gut-wrenching terror. When you can just wrap your arm, you hold yourself in your arms and you just sob because you know you have nowhere to turn, nowhere to go. Just stay. So anyway, I got out of that treatment center, and I learned a lesson, and that was is that maybe this program would work for my alcoholism, would help me with my drinking problem. But please don't ask me to give you all my other problems, because, see, God doesn't answer my prayers. And I had some fears that I had stuffed deep down inside. And I didn't let those fears go, and I didn't talk about those fears. And they certainly weren't on my inventory. And I didn't have to drink over that. I drank for another reason, but I didn't have to drink over that. But what I did have to do was hit a bottom in sobriety. And when I hit that bottom in sobriety, I finally had to develop a relationship with God that is the one that I have today. And that is that I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that no matter what happens in my life, girl, no girl, wife, no wife, house, no house, job, no job, kids, no kids, money, no money, that God has my back. That I can go anywhere and do anything and be with anyone, and I'm going to be okay. And that's with tragedy. And that's what a bottom in sobriety did for me. That's what a bottom in sobriety did for me. It made me finally let go of those old ideas that I brought in here. The ones that we have to let go absolutely or the result is nil. And by letting go absolutely. And I have to pay homage to some people right now. Having some people in my life who really kind of cared more about how I was doing than how I was feeling. And who would say, mean things to me like, go put that chair away. Go pick up that trash. Go clean those bathrooms. Instead of giving me a pat on the back or a hug and telling me, it's going to be okay, boo-boo. You know, I'm the product of strong sponsorship. I want to pay tribute to my first two sponsors who are no longer with us. They're up at the big meeting in the sky, laughing their butts off, having a blast. Jimmy T. from San Diego and Peter F. from San Diego. My sobriety day, as I said, is January 31st of 1985. My home group is Cedar Street Men's, meets on Sunday morning in San Diego. If you want a seat, you will need to get there at 7:30. And even then, you might not get a seat. My sponsor is Johnny H. And those sponsors have taught me how to live this program. Not because of what they've said to me, but because of what they did. And by living by their example and having their example, I've gotten a little bit of the grace, a little bit of the grace that we get from our God. And I've been able to develop that relationship with a higher power that I shared with you about. And I don't treat God like a bush league pinch hitter anymore. I have to tell you, I can't remember the last time that I prayed for something. In my morning prayers, I ask God to direct my thinking and my actions so that I can be of maximum service to Him and the people around me. And I have a couple other simple prayers. I do the third step prayer, and I do the seventh step prayer, and I do a little bit of a variation on the 11th step prayer. And I read a meditation book. And then I go out and live my life. You know, and I have clay feet. I make mistakes all day, into the night. You know, and then I do 10 steps, and I have to do amends, because that's what we do here. You know, and a person said that he tries to go through his life doing things seemingly unnoticed in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and there are countless people who are helping in this conference who are going through this thing and helping this thing go on doing things seemingly unnoticed. And, you know, that's a goal. That's an objective that I have to tell you is like a perfect objective for somebody like me. And I get to fail miserably. And that's okay. Because, see, if I get to fail miserably, then you get to fail miserably too. And none of us have to stand up to some sort of, you know, standard or anything of that nature. You know, that portion of step seven that I was talking about talks about how our failures become our greatest assets and how we get to use those failures in order to help other people, in order to help them stay sober, to help them get sober and stay sober. You know, and those are the things that I get to live with today. So, for those of you who are wondering, is there a God and will He work for me? I can only tell you that my experience has been is, yes, there is, and yes, He will. And I hope you find Him. And I also hope that you don't necessarily have to go and hit the bottom that I hit in sobriety, because that was a very painful bottom. But it was a necessary bottom. And I can remember that those dark days, because I wanted to die too. And a drink was never attractive, because the drink had stopped shutting off the noise in my head before I got here. And that wasn't an option. So I hope you find that relationship with a God as you understand Him. And I hope you stay with us and you walk this road of happy destiny, right? It's a road of happy destiny, not to happy destiny. We're already there. We don't have anywhere to go. We're already there. And it's been a blessing to be here. I want to close with one final thought, and that is that There were three prayers that a lady shared with from the podium. The first one was that when we get here to Alcoholics Anonymous, we just want to say, God help me. Because that's the way we feel. We're just desperate and we're hopeless and we don't know where to turn and we're out of options. And that's the only thing we can do is to say, God help me. And then after we're here for a while, we say, God give me. And I'm a greedy SOB, so that's typically what I do. And I fall into that trap all the time. But the prayer that I want to leave you with, that I hope you can strive for and reach for and get the joy from that I get, is the prayer which is, God use me. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Our third speaker, I saw her name and I emailed my buddy Eno. He was my conference buddy at the conference this year in New York. He's from Puerto Rico. And I said, do you know this lady? And he said, she's a good friend of mine and you can ask me anything you want about her, which I refrain from doing. That's good enough for me, you know, the word of one alcoholic for another. So I was just thinking about what John just said about that prayer, help me. You know, somebody told me to use that when I was my first month of sobriety, and the word they say is scoffed. I think I used a different word. I remember how scared I was to do that, to say that. And I went home to my empty house where my wife had moved out and took all the furniture and left me with her dog. And I pulled the blinds shut and I turned the lights off because I didn't want anybody to see me try that. And I tried it. And, you know, and it worked, and that obsession, that mental obsession, physical craving went away, and it's never come back since. And so I know it works, just like John said. You know, all you got to do is give it a try. So, okay, Mary Beth, you're the cleanup hitter.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mary Beth. I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Quinn. I am feeling much more nervous than Bethany and John looked or sounded. But I am really grateful to be here. My sobriety date is September 29, 2003. My home group is the Condado 12 and 12 group in Condado San Juan, Puerto Rico. And we meet at Sunday morning at 7:30 a.m. And I do want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. And when they did, I thought it was a really good idea. And now that I'm here and I'm looking around at all of you, I'm wondering just what was I thinking? Yeah. But I was very anxious last night and very nervous. And when I feel like that, I call my sponsor. And I called her and I said, you know, I have to speak tomorrow, and I'm feeling very anxious, meaning I'm feeling fear. And she said to me, do you want a drink? I said, well, no, I don't want a drink. She said, pray. And then she said to me, she gave a big sigh, it's not about you. And she's so right. It's just not about me today. Although sometimes it feels like that. And like John, when I got the topic for this meeting, I got nervous because I thought, you know, I just don't feel like I've had any kind of formal religious training, you know. I've just never really believed in God, and I've never disbelieved in God. I just really didn't care. So my conception of prayer is a little different. It's not always the conventional get on my knees and pray, which is what I did because you told me to do that, and I prayed to the great nothingness. And I did it every morning and night because you told me that I needed to do it every morning and night and go to a meeting and not pick up a drink and talk to another alcoholic. And that's what I did. But to me, prayer is, it's any spiritual relationship that I have. It's any powerful relationship that I have that yields extraordinary results. And today I have powerful relationships, and they have yielded extraordinary results. But that's not always been the case. I want to tell you about my life before I found prayer. Just so wild. I can't even believe I'm here. This is insane. And I look around this room and I see Brittany. I love you, Brittany. And she's here with a sponsee who has 90 days. Brittany is 22 years old. Or are you still 22? Oh, she's 23. She's 23 now. Her sponsee is 18. Bethany, thank you. Extraordinary. What an extraordinary message from a young person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that she has powerful relationships. I believe she has spiritual relationships. I believe that Bethany has found freedom. I can feel it. Before prayer, my life, John said, it was, it felt dark. And it felt lonely, and I was restless, irritable, and discontent, but so much more than that. And I remember my first drink, and my whole perception of reality changed when I took that first drink, and I felt so connected. And if I ever had a relationship in my life, it was that moment. And it was extraordinary. And how deceiving that was, because as connected as I felt, it was really the beginning of the isolation. And things never got better. They always got worse. And I crossed that line very early in my life, and I lost the ability to control and enjoy my drinking. I left home at, I was almost 15, I was 14, I was almost 15, and I decided that I no longer needed the family unit and the guidance, any parental guidance, because I really knew one thing, and it's that I wanted to drink. And off I went, with no life skills and no street skills, and, but I knew I wanted to drink. And I didn't have spiritual relationships. I didn't have powerful relationships. I sought out sordid people in sordid places. And I did sordid things because I wanted sordid attention. And I felt like I sat around and tasted my teeth rot. I felt, on occasion, like it might be a good idea to remember who the president was. Or maybe sometimes what year it was. And I experienced incomprehensible demoralization on a daily basis. Terror, frustration,
bewilderment and despair. And I'm very familiar with those feelings. And I'm going to tell you how they felt. Terror was paralyzing. Paralyzing. There were moments in my life where I was paralyzed with terror. Couldn't speak, couldn't move, couldn't live. Spiritual relationship, powerful relationship. I didn't even have a relationship with myself. I didn't even feel human. That's devastatingly lonely. Frustration. You know, I thought I had average intelligence. And I thought that I could make myself happy. And I tried many things over and over. And I was very frustrated that I couldn't make myself happy. What was wrong with me? Bewilderment. That felt like, how did I end up here again? How did I get here again? It was going to be different this time. And despair. Despair is the absolute worst because there's no energy. And that feels like, I'm still here. Devastating. Nothing spiritual. Nothing powerful. I wished for the end. I remember on one occasion that when I still had a home, after I got a home and lost a home, and that I decided that it was the neighbor's fault. Because it was always your fault. It was never mine. If there was something wrong, it was you. It wasn't me. And it was the neighbor's fault. It was the police's fault. And I thought the best thing for me to do would be to hang myself at about 3 a.m. in the tree out front of my house. Because then in the morning, the neighbor would wake up and find out what a horrible person she was. What an incredibly horrible person. And she would realize then how self-righteous she was. And I did try to hang myself, but the branch broke. And I ended up laying on my front lawn at 3 o'clock in the morning in despair and wishing for the end and saying to myself, oh, I'm still here. And one day, and it was a day like any other day. I wasn't in more trouble or less trouble, and I wasn't doing anything more or less than I had done before, but the day came when some kind of power entered my life and drove me toward that which is good for me. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I believe it's at that moment that I began to have a spiritual relationship. I began to have some kind of powerful relationship, and it yielded me extraordinary results. I didn't get on my knees and pray because I didn't believe, but I began a dialogue somehow with some power in my life. And, you know, and prayer, the purpose of prayer for me or any of these relationships is to get direction, to get an intuitive thought, to find freedom, to help others. I didn't know that then, but I must have begun this dialogue because at that moment I got an intuitive thought and it was pick up the phone. And I picked up the phone and I called my father and I said to him, I need help. Can you come get me? He said, no, I can't help you. You know, here's a man who I had come home, knocked on the door, and asked, "Please, Daddy, let me just take a shower. Let me just sleep here tonight." And he said, "No." And he was right. But he said he couldn't help me, so I called my sister, who's in Alcoholics Anonymous, certain that she would help me. And I said to her, "Bobby, I need help. Can you come and get me?" She said, "No. You'll have to call AA." And she gave me a phone number, and that phone number was for an old-timer, and his name was Jimmy. And I called Jimmy, and I said, "Jimmy, I need help. Will you come and get me?" And he said to me, "Baby, you done yet?" I said, "Yeah, Jimmy, I'm done." And this is 6 a.m. or something. And he said, "Well, I'm a little busy right now." He was doing some 12-step work at 6 a.m. "You'll have to wait." And in my mind, I'm thinking, I am ready now. Clearly, you need to come and get me now. This is what my mind is telling me. And what came out of my mouth was, "I'll wait." And wait I did on the corner in Philadelphia for 2 hours until Jimmy pulls up in an illegal car with the muffler tied up with stocking pantyhose. And he opens the door and says, "Baby, get in," you know. And there were some other people in that car, and we went off in this car, and he dropped them off. And finally, it was just he and I in the car, and he took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I climbed up the steps to that meeting, and I was crying, and I was throwing up, and I wasn't smelling very good. I hadn't had a shower in a long time. And Jimmy was sitting at the other end of the table. I was sitting at this end, and he was sitting at that end. The meeting hadn't started yet, and he looks over at me, and he scowls at me, and I'm crying. And he looks over at me, and he says, "Stop crying." And then he said to me, this is not, it was not funny at the time, but he said to me, "You're too thin to win, and you're too light to fight." I know today he didn't find that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also know what he meant when he said, "Stop crying." He meant stop being so selfish. And when he said, "You're too thin to win," he meant you have no power. And when he said, "You're too light to fight," he meant stop fighting. And I sat in that meeting, and I listened to you tell me, "If you want what we have, you'll do what we do." And you told me, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You told me there is a solution. And you showed me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is that, right in the beginning, it says, "We are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body." That was good news. I began a spiritual relationship with you. That same day, I began a spiritual relationship with the power in my life that continues to drive me toward that which is good for me. So now I have dialogue. I have spiritual relationships because I'm using spiritual principles. I don't even know it. Because I said to you, "Help me." And you told me how. I listened. You know, there's a couple of old timers that I want to tell you a story about. One of them's name is Jimmy. And the other one is Dudley. And then Jimmy and Dudley, they like to go fishing. And Jimmy and Dudley go fishing on some Saturdays. And on occasion, they take a newcomer with them. And on one particular Saturday, they took a newcomer. His name was Bob. So Dudley and Jimmy and Bob get in the boat, and they go out on the lake. And they're somewhere less than an eighth of a mile from shore. And they're sitting there, and they're fishing. And Dudley looks over at Jimmy and says, you know, I've forgotten my favorite reel. And he stands up and he steps off the boat and he walks across the water to the shore. And he gets his favorite reel. He walks across the water and gets back in the boat. And a little while later, Jimmy indicated that he forgot his favorite lure and he stood up and he walked across the water and he got his lure and he got walked across the water and got back in the boat. And Bob is sitting there thinking, these people are walking on water. He was intrigued. And he stood up very quickly. He told Jimmy and Howard he had forgotten his lunch, and he stepped off the boat. Bob drowned. Jimmy looks at Howard and says, Howard, we can't save him. And Howard says, yeah, but if he'd have asked us where the stones were, we would have told him. And I think about that story, and I think about those stones, and I wonder if those stones aren't the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wonder if those stones aren't powerful relationships. I wonder if those aren't the pathway to fellowship. I know they're the pathway to power. And I know that pathway has yielded me extraordinary results. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to invite you to embrace the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to invite you to begin a dialogue, build powerful relationships, build spiritual relationships, find freedom, and get some extraordinary results. I invite you to prayer. P-R-A-Y-E-R. Powerful relationships always yielding extraordinary results. My name's Mary Beth, and I am so grateful you have allowed me to be of service.
Thank you, Mary Beth. You know, when she was talking, I was thinking about, there's a young man in my home group back in Lee Summit that went back out yesterday or 2 days ago. And, you know, and that's a prayer under pressure for everybody else that knows him. You know, we're all praying for him to get back to the halls. He wants it. He wants it real bad. He's just struggling with it. And I was thinking, when I used to, the only prayers I ever said before I got here was, I was hoping that the liquor store would open right at 6 a.m. or whenever it opened, you know. Hoping that guy wasn't 1 minute late because I really needed to get in there. And I was hoping the guy sitting next to me on the bar wasn't the guy that was working on my car Monday morning. You know, those are the kind of prayers. But, you know, I'm a firm believer in prayer for other people. And they have a lot of pressure, and maybe I can take some of that pressure off of them. Maybe I can pray for them for some grace to come into their lives, or some gratitude to follow them around and hit them on the shoulder. One of the prayers I ask every morning is for to help me pray, give me the strength and the grace to practice the spirit of St. Francis prayer every day. Because I don't know what I'm going to do or say that may, or think that may affect someone. You know, I have this gigantic head that puts pressure on me sometimes when I least expect it. And I believe that God puts me in some situations so I can practice the prayer a little more, that maybe I'm a little behind on it for that week, and I can get some good situations to practice that. I believe that prayer is one of the most valuable spiritual tools that we have in this program of recovery. And how you do it, or who you do it with, or where you do it, that's the magic of it. There's so many different interpretations of it, you know, just like the higher power deal, as you understand it. The thing I heard from the three speakers was that they all use prayer in their lives, no matter how big or how small the pressure is. And sometimes there's good pressure. You know, sometimes things are going so good and all you can say is thank you, which is a very powerful prayer. And I believe that gives room for a lot of things to come into an alcoholic's life. And I heard that in these three speakers tonight. And I want to thank them again. Bethany from North Carolina. Thank you, Bethany. John from California. Thank you, John. And Mary Beth from Puerto Rico. I want to thank all of you for being out there today, and we are going to close with a serenity prayer if you'd care to join. Thank you all for sharing in this afternoon.